Attendance for the millions watching around the world. Let's get ready to suck
it! It is Off the Ropes with Jason Cordner, Chris McSwiggin, the best 90 minutes of wrestling you're going to hear on the internet, and we're taking you through another Raw, that's right, March 7th edition. We were here last week. We talked a little bit about it. We've talked a little bit about how Raw has been better the last couple of weeks. Because, why is it? Oh, well, hey, they're going back to their style. And that's what made them their money. That's what people want. And we've gotten a small snippet of it. Beforehand in the pre-production meeting here, Jason was telling me a little bit about Raw needs to really step up their game before WrestleMania. Because this is probably one of the least anticipated WrestleManias in a while, and he was telling me that they got three brutal crowds coming up: Chicago, Philly, and then Brooklyn. Explain to me a little bit why, because I'm watching the show, I'm watching Raw right now, and the crowd's been actually pretty good here in Chicago despite a subpar program so far. So why does Chicago and Philly make so much of a difference for them?
I think it's because they're pretty much smart wrestling fans. You know, they have great stable, you know, between ECW, between Ring of Honor. That's pretty much the main territories for the real smart mark wrestling fans. As you can see by the heat that the crowd's going tonight. I mean, how many CM Punk chants we heard tonight?
Well, they love CM Punk, but there's I mean, I think that the crowd is still, well, not just Chicago. I think the wrestling world is still a little bit rocked about what happened with CM Punk and that whole thing, because he kind of just disappeared out of the blue. And then went and threw them under the bus with his whole podcasting that he did and whatnot. So I think that would it be too far to say that maybe CM Punk and releasing that podcast and what happened to him and his experience, would it be too far off base to say that perhaps a lot of the negativity that they're facing right now is solely because of that?
It could be. I mean, he did bring, he did show us a light about the whole behind the scenes of the WWE in terms of, like, medical staff and concussion protocol. And we kind of see that now because, like, ever since he left, so many talents have gotten injured, and they can't hide that fact anymore.
And he broke sort of the metaphorical fourth wall in a way, sort of bringing the backstage politics into the limelight, things that people don't see on their television screens or see when they're sitting there live. So the fact that he sort of exposed the business for what it is, I think sort of rubs some people the wrong way, saying, wow, you know, Vince kind of is a jerk, or Triple H kind of is a you-know-what. And, you know, for a while, all of Vince's heat was kayfabe. I mean, when the crowd used to, you know, give him the a-hole chant and all that, that was just part of the act. Now I really think that people are starting to see that perhaps maybe he is a little corrupt.
Could be. But I like that. It's good for business. I mean, let us peek behind the curtain a little bit and see what's going on out there.
Sure. Now, for those of you who know the show, you know that we take you through the end of Raw. And subpar program for the most part. I mean, we started off the program probably in the most expected way possible.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon came out to arguably the biggest pop I've heard for any star in a long time. And right now, you know, that show is – it's been a couple of subpar matches. Right now, if you're watching New Day versus Y2J and AJ Styles, he's got the Walls of Jericho locked into Kofi Kingston. Are we going to see new tag champs? I mean, I'm getting sick of New Day personally.
I think we're not just yet going to see new tag team champions. I think we're going to see a split.
Yeah. You think you're going to see a split between these two?
I think so. I think we're going to see a split, even though we're not seeing it right now. But
no, there's Biggie Langston, who definitely does not skip leg day. That is for sure. He is a big dude.
Does not miss leg day at all.
No. Is he going to put the Walls of Jericho? He's going to put the Walls of Jericho on Biggie. Nope. Biggie's got too much leg power. He's not putting it on him. But so far, a subpar show. We've seen Kevin Owens. We saw the Dolph Ziggler versus your favorite, the League of Nations.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty interesting. I mean, that was a very Attitude Era-esque type of match with McMahon throwing his power around, or in this case, Stephanie throwing her power around. So very similar. Oh, yeah, there it is. New Day wins. Big E gets the win, of course. Okay, so Jason called it yet again. But, you know, we've seen a couple of subpar things, and, you know, we had a pretty good Divas match. I know you're a big Sasha Banks fan.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, what does this company have to do? Because, yes, even though the crowd has sort of cooperated a little bit tonight here in Chicago and we weren't quite sure if they were going to, even though that they've cooperated, what do we have to do to see sort of a successful three-week run before WrestleMania? Because I played that Shane McMahon music and he came out to arguably the biggest pop he's had since the first night he was back, and he hasn't been around in a while. Are we going to need to see a healthy dose of Shane these next 3 weeks, or what exactly does this company have to do to be successful going into the biggest pay-per-view of the year?
I think we do need to see more of Shane. It would have been good if, like, The Undertaker came on and, like, confronted Shane. It's like, listen, I'm going to have to kick your ass up Mania. It's nothing personal. Mm-hmm. It's just what I got to do. I mean, I would love to see them, too, just in the ring, just to see how Shane would interact with Undertaker. Like, would he be
intimidated? Well, I was pooping my pants when the dong went off today, and only to find out that it was Vince. But, yeah, I was like, oh, my God, Taker, because I love, you know, Undertaker and everything. In fact, I'm considering going to the Barclays event down in your neck of the woods there in Brooklyn, because, like I said, as much as I've been to WWE shows, I got unlucky. I've always been to WWE shows before, either when Undertaker was on his break between 99 and 2000, and then after he was sort of a sporadic wrestler. I've never seen Undertaker come out live, and that's one thing I've always kind of wanted to do. And I know that
it's a chilling, eerie experience.
When I actually look at this, you called it again. Jason Cordero just dropping spoilers left and right. For those of you who may have just tuned in with us, he said that we're going to see a Y2J and AJ split, and Jericho just gave the code breaker to AJ Styles after they lost.
Look at the crowd like, what the hell?
I mean, I have it on mute. Let me try to hear this crowd reaction. Hang on. Let's see here. Oh, where's the volume? Look at this. The crowd actually doesn't like this. The Jericho heel turn. There's a second code breaker. Yeah, the Boo Birds are out in Chi City.
There you go.
So people were actually feeling
some of his best work as a heel. He does some of his best work as a heel. Let him be a heel.
Well, yes, he does, but that's if you like heels. So, man, remember, I was going through the WWE Network, and I was watching the Raws from 1999 all the way through, and I'm on 2001 right now, and he was one of the biggest baby faces they had back then, and he got huge pops and everything. I like a lot as the face who would sort of make fun of Stephanie and defy authority and things like that. But I know he had been a heel for a while. But look at this, though. I don't understand why, because I think people liked seeing these two together, but I think that they were sort of sick of seeing these two face each other because it had been 3-4 weeks in a row that they would go at it, And now if they form sort of a rivalry between these two, people might get bored with it. A third codebreaker. Wow. All right. Well, they're either doing one of two
things. I like where this is going because I think they haven't had a grade A match yet. And I think at Mania, if they add up to the card, it could be that grade A match that AJ needs going forward. And, you know, Jericho's great at putting talent over. So I
Well, yeah, he's put a lot of guys over.
Yeah. Remember
and you know, I think Jericho here, I think what they're doing is Jericho obviously is 40-something years old. He's not going to be able to continue wrestling at a high rate. If he makes his heel turn and really, like you said, pushes AJ over as a face, then he could get AJ really over in this sense. And I think right now he's doing that because this crowd is really giving some heat.
The shirt down the throat. Love it. This is some attitude stuff.
It's very similar, yes, except we would have probably seen a couple chair shots or something in that sense. But so
PG.
When you say a good crowd reaction here, you need to have a little bit of booing heat, though, because this booing is not the same kind of booing that they were giving Roman Reigns. When Roman Reigns won the belt at the Royal Rumble for the first time, those crowd boos were genuine. I think this crowd boo is really sort of part of the kayfabe a little bit. I mean, this crowd is giving it to them like they would to a normal heel, whereas with Roman, they were just upset to see him win. They didn't want him to win. So I think it's a little bit different when you see boos and sort of reading what they mean.
But you know what? It's kind of like, I know we're going to talk about it later on, but it's kind of why they booked Triple H versus Dean Ambrose at Roadblock, because everybody's cheering the way Triple H is beating up on Roman Reigns, and they don't want that. So they're going to give, you know, they're going to have Triple H face Dean Ambrose so Triple H could get that organic heel reaction again. But I still don't think that's going to work, but we'll talk about that
really
later on the show.
Really quick, though, since you have been Miss Cleo tonight in terms of your spoilers and things, I mean, in fact, I'm pretty sure you called Triple H winning the Rumble, too. You and I both kind of called that.
Yep.
Does Triple H drop the belt at Roadblock?
No, I think we're still getting Triple H against Roman Reigns. I expect Brock to interfere in that match to some capacity, but I don't think.
I mean, because you can put a guy over and not have him lose, you know. So
that's true.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can have him lose and still put him over. Is what I mean. Like, you know, if Triple H does something really, you know, dastardly and really does something very heel-like in this match, he can still, I mean, Ambrose is over already, but he could put him even farther over. And I don't know if you guys get local commercials, but Polish Community Center. Kevin Nash, Hardcore Holly, Marty Giannetti, Yeah, Marty Jannetty, and who was that other guy? Scott. I can't see with my thing here. Wow, these guys have been really reduced. They're going to the Polish Community Center. Anyway, Scott Norton. Okay, I'm not quite sure.
Scott Norton. Wow, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Wow. March 12th, 2016, IYFWrestling.com. Huh. Oh, In Your Face Wrestling is what it's. I have no idea. Look at this, photo ops, wrestling and collectible memorabilia, superstar autographs, live wrestling, 7 p.m., tickets start at $25. Huh, that's really, like, look, they're in like a gym. That's pretty interesting, actually. There's some relatively big Hall of Fame names. That's, wow. Good job, local advertising.
Nice.
So let me ask you here. There are ways, because obviously we're not going to see Attitude Era again. I mean, I'm on the part of 2001 right now with the two-man power trip and just how violent and brutal, you know, chain matches, people getting thrown through windows and, you know, breaking people's arms with a chair and the whole shebang. I am not expecting to see anything quite that graphic, but does the crowd, does the company necessarily have to make that Attitude Era shift? Like, really go Attitude Era-ish with it in order to get a good couple of shows before WrestleMania? Or is there a way to do it with the format that they are still in and still, you know, get a pretty good build-up for Mania?
I think they can do it with the format they're in. But you know what makes it even more intriguing that they should go back to that. What they should go back to is, especially now that Cena's not around, your Fruity Pebbles, your child superhero is not on the road to WrestleMania. So now's the perfect time to go straight PG, straight pre-Attitude Era on us. You got Roman Reigns taking beatings. You got Ambrose taking a beating. You got Jericho turning on his new partner with those nice, cute Y2J AJ T-shirts. Now's the time
Y2 AJ, that was kind of... Yeah, I'm kind of glad that happened in a way. That was kind of a gimmicky type team. I wasn't wild about that.
That was so cheesy.
Yeah, I was not wild about that at all. But, okay. So, I think that they've got to end tonight's show very similar to how they ended the last couple of shows. It doesn't even necessarily have to be Triple H, but it could be something that, just makes the crowd go, oh, my God. And I think that's sort of something that they have to do at this point. But, to me, I just can't get excited about it with the previous, what we said on previous shows with this current announced team. I mean, yet again,
yeah.
I know we've played this clip several times before, but perhaps in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, and people can feel free to email us, call in, whatever it might be. In my opinion, the biggest heel turn of all time was WrestleMania 17. I mean, I'm sorry, but that could have been anybody, okay? And that kind of reaction from the announce team, you could have made anything interesting. Stone Cold could have came out and opened a sandwich out of a paper bag and JR would have made it sound interesting. So, to me, Michael Cole, that same sort of heel turn would have been, oh, good gosh, look at Stone Cold. He's joining forces with Vince. Oh my goodness! It just doesn't do it for me. And even now, like last week, Cole, like even you commented, okay, Michael Cole did a decent job portraying the Triple H beatdown, but it's not the same, man. And being a broadcaster myself, a play-by-play guy myself, is something that I think really gets the people into it that are watching at home. As those of you who are watching Raw right now, Kalisto versus Tyler Breeze, not a match I really care about. Let me ask you this, though. Do you feel that back in the Attitude Era, I'm going to start with end of 97, but really the heat of it was 99, 2000, 2001. Do you feel that the mid-card back then, I mean, guys like Big Boss Man, DX, when they weren't in the main event storylines, even guys like Kane, you look at who was fighting outside of the world title matches on Raw. Do you feel that the mid card was much better and much more stacked back then?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up because growing up, my favorite title was always the Intercontinental title because that was a title that was defended more so often on television, and the likes of like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, I go back to Mr. Perfect, I go back to the British Bulldog. I mean, so many people. I mean, the British Bulldog and Bret Hart fought for the Intercontinental title. It was the main event at SummerSlam. I can't remember the year off the top of my head. But it used to produce – that was the working man's title. And now I can't even – the mid-card is is in shambles. I can't even where to start to begin. However, I did like seeing the return of Sami Zayn. Because him and Owens have real heat, and I don't know if anybody's familiar or even watched like old Ring of Honor. Sami Zayn back in the days was known as El Generico. He pretty much wore a mask. And him and Kevin Owens had some great indies matches. And I think we're probably going to see that at WrestleMania. So maybe that might be a little help with the mid-card. But like someone like Kalisto, like, who is he fighting? Who is contending for the U.S. belt right now? Like, why is he even having
nobody.
That belt?
The U.S. belt that they brought back, remember for a while they didn't have any belts besides the world title and Intercontinental. And then Mick Foley came out and brought belts back and did all this stuff. But, I mean, I'm looking at, okay, this week, it was actually March 6th, so it was 16 years ago as of yesterday, okay, March 6th, 2000, okay, during the heat of the Attitude Era, Stone Cold was gone with his neck injury, Undertaker was gone, the only real guy that they had that was big time was Triple H, he was the one, the champion, he had his whole beef with Mick Foley and the whole thing going on. You look at what we've had so far, League of Nations versus Dolph Ziggler, who I'm not really sold on Dolph either. You've got matches like this. You've got the Jericho-AJ match or whatever. Kevin Owens fought earlier. There's guys like that. You look at, okay, the show opened up, obviously, with a talking segment between Triple H and Stephanie, as they did most of the time, whatever. But match-wise, Kane versus The Big Show. Okay, that's a huge way to start off the show. Kane versus Big Show, Mark Henry versus Devon Dudley, okay, DX versus Too Cool, Kurt Angle versus Chris Jericho for the Intercontinental title, Triple H versus Rikishi, Jeff Hardy versus Steve Blackman, Edge and Christian versus the Radicals, because the Radicals had just recently made their appearance, Viscera versus Crash Holly for the Hardcore title, Chris Benoit versus The Rock was the main event. Okay, so I'm looking at this like, all right, you know, all these main event guys, every single one of these guys who came out before Triple H and The Rock, in this case, it wasn't even Triple H in the main event, it was Benoit, but in this case, I'm looking at this, and every single one of these guys is a big name. I mean, Kurt Angle and Jericho, Rikishi ended up being huge, he was a mid-card guy back then, DX, obviously, Too Cool, who a lot of people thought was corny. I kind of liked their whole gimmick.
Oh, I liked them. I liked them a lot.
Yeah, Mark Henry, the whole Mae Young thing, yeah, it was weird, his sexual chocolate, but still, he's a big name. He's still around today. I mean, that show that I just listed with those wrestlers was a much better show, by exponentially better than anything that they're putting out today, simply because of the raw talent. And it shouldn't be that difficult to be able to get a bunch of roided up guys and write a good storyline for them. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's a lack of talent, and we're going to get – this is one of our topics we'll get to a little bit later on here, but I don't think it's a lack of talent. I really don't. I think it's a lack of the same sort of storytellers, because remember, once Vince Russo left and went to WCW, things got a little interesting in terms of booking in the WWF back then. And, you know, it wasn't the whole, you know, soap opera type thing that Russo used to write. But to me, I feel that this was an entertaining show from start to finish. It really was. And even the guy reviewing it here, Raw Wrestling Rants from Blogspot.com, is one of the top wrestling reviewers. He even said it was an interesting show from top to bottom. I mean, when you start off Kane versus The Big Show, you know it's going to be a good night. And, you know, even matches, like when you can say that DX versus Too Cool, or when you can say that Triple H Rikishi were your sort of in-between matches, Jeff Hardy, which we know what they did, versus Blackman, who I really liked, it's just they wrote it so well, and they made, and we've mentioned this on previous shows, they made these characters people that you loved and you hated. They made these characters... They built storylines so well, and they would just continue to build and build and build and build throughout the weeks, so that finally when it came to the head at the pay-per-view, it made you be like, geez, I got to buy this pay-per-view. I got to know what's going to happen. And now it's like there's different guys fighting different people every week. There's no real beefs or storylines right now. They give up on things way too soon. I mean,
way
just
too soon.
Yeah, just because the crowd boos one time doesn't mean you can't keep pushing it. I mean, I don't know. Right now, the booking is just a nightmare.
I mean, what's the real beef that's going on in WWE right now? Like, who's fighting?
It's
got to
be, well, it's Roman Reigns. It's world title beef. That's it. It's the Authority versus Roman Reigns and Ambrose, and possibly the Lesnar-Ambrose thing. Other than that, the mid-carders really don't have any storylines.
It's so weird. It's so weird how they're doing the booking. And you think, you know, WrestleMania is only, what, 4 weeks away. You want to start filling out that card. And, like, if I had tickets, I would be a little worried. Because, like, how many must-see matches do we have on the card right now that I would want to be interested other
you
than...
know, a lot of people are saying that.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying that the Shane Undertaker is a must-see. To me, I'm still not sold on it. I still don't like it. I think it would be a hell of a lot better if it was with all the heat, especially the way Raw started tonight with Vince stepping on the picture and saying, you know, you're not my real son anymore and I'm writing you out of the will and the whole thing. If it was Vince versus Shane, that would be a hell of a match. To me, throwing The Undertaker in the equation is just kind of putting him in to sell tickets, really. I mean, to me, it really doesn't make sense to put Shane when you have everything on your line and your company on the line and you have an icon who really shouldn't even have lost when he did at WrestleMania. You're just throwing him in there to sell tickets and boost ratings. I don't like it at all. I'm probably not going to like it. The fact that I think if it was Vince versus Shane, it would make a heck of a lot more sense in this storyline.
Or Shane versus Triple H or something like that.
Well, yeah, that would even be better.
Right.
But again, Triple H has the world title right now because for some reason they are really, really sold on keeping Seth Rollins when he comes back. Without Rollins in, they don't know what to do, it seems like.
Rollins was their shambles. Guy. Yeah, he was. But like now when he comes back, he's gonna be a face. So that's even more questions like in terms of who's the heel, who's not. You can't have all three of the Shield members come back and be in face, because then the fans are going to want a Shield reunion.
Well, do you feel do you feel that maybe social media was a catalyst of this? Whereas nowadays, people can do a little bit of research. They can type a couple of things into Google, and they can know that he's going to come back as a face, and they can know what the plans are going to be, and they can know this and that, spoilers here and there, whatever it might be. But back in maybe in the Attitude Era during the heat of it when the internet really was just getting going and people didn't have smartphones, they didn't really have cell phones, they sort of relied on the product that was on screen or the product that they saw at the arena to know if there would be a face turn or a heel turn or whatever. Nowadays, to me, heel turns and face turns and those things aren't quite as exciting to me because I know it's coming.
You know it's coming. But a prime example of that for both sides is the Daniel Bryan situation. Like, that was all social media behind Daniel Bryan to get that push because the WWE had their heart set out on Batista versus Orton. Like, they were set with that match, but everybody was like, you know, boo Batista. That changes that. But coming around to Roman Reigns, they're staying put with that. They're not changing that at all. They're not listening to the fans and so forth. And then you look at someone, I would say, like with Cena. Right before Cena lost his U.S. title to De Niro, we didn't know Roberto De Niro was coming back, but we did know Cena was taking time off to go shoot a reality show. So
we knew he was going to drop it, yeah.
We just didn't know who he was going to drop it to, but we knew he was going to drop it. So it's a double-edged sword when it comes to, like, you know, social media and the fans being smarter now, so I think the product has to evolve and be smarter than the fans.
Oh, that's cool. The Godfather's getting in this year, and the Big Boss Man. Awesome. So, see, those are two guys I enjoyed. But when I say in, I mean the Hall of Fame. But, for instance, when The Rock left the first time to go make a movie was in when the two-man power trip formed, and they dismantled The Rock in the steel cage, and they left him laying, and Stone Cold and Triple H sort of joined up. And the whole thing, you had no idea. Like, the storyline was that The Rock was suspended indefinitely. They then brought The Rock back for the invasion storyline. But you didn't necessarily know, unless you were a real insider, that he was going to make a movie. You just thought he was suspended, and you weren't quite sure exactly what had happened. But you really had to dig a little deeper. Now, everybody knew Cena was dropping the belt. They didn't know, like you said, but they didn't know who he was dropping it to, but they knew he was dropping it. Speaking of that, Ryback is on the screen right now. Their social media is going crazy right now as after WrestleMania, Ryback is going to get the push and even a world title push, which I think should have been 4 years ago when he was first getting hot.
But finally, they've decided, okay, well, we need to push somebody. We're going to give it to the big guy. But to me, Ryback is, you know, Ryback is to me, just washed up. I don't have any interest. I don't care about Ryback anymore. You know, back then, when he was fighting CM Punk, he was a destructive force. And then he sort of became a jobber for a little while. And now he just doesn't matter, I don't think, anymore, in my opinion.
No, I agree. But I kind of like Ryback as a bad guy. But then even the kayfabes are online are saying now that Vince has big plans to push Ryback. And that's because Vince is infatuated with big guys. It's so sad.
Oh, he loves them. But, you know, you watch the Attitude Era guys, and there wasn't even really that many big guys. I mean, Stone Cold's not really considered a big dude. You know, The Rock's not really big. Triple H was a monster, still is. But, you know, Undertaker, Kane, those guys. But you watch the Attitude Era, which made Vince all of his money. And a catalyst of them was the Hardy Boys, who were small. Edge and Christian, who were relatively small. Angle's not really all that big. You know, Chris Benoit was a solid body, but wasn't super big. I mean, you didn't really start to see big guys like this until 2003, 2004, with the whole Batista and Chris Masters and, you know, Randy Orton and those kind of guys, when the big guys really started coming. And then you saw it before that, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, you know, those kind of guys. But for a while, during arguably the most prominent time in their history, you didn't have a whole bunch of big guys to choose from.
Nope.
So I don't know where this infatuation is coming from. Oh, and now the social outcasts are on. So this is the part of Raw, ladies and gentlemen, that you can put it on mute and listen to us, because really nobody cares about the social outcasts. And you know, another thing, too, that I think you mentioned something about, you think this guy's going to be back? You think CM Punk is going to make a return, I think you said last week?
I think if CM Punk catches a beating the way Conor McGregor did in his last fight, on CM Punk's first fight, he'll be back in time for WrestleMania 33, just that.
Well, okay, but with everything that they did to him and the way that he trashed the company and the way that he was fired, at least if there's any truth to the way that he said he was on the podcast, do you really think that that would be a healthy environment for him to come back? I mean, I'm watching, to give you an example, WWE Network, you have all the Raw replays and you watch all that. You can watch everything from 1984 all the way through last week's Raw, but conveniently they cut out some of 2003, which I believe they have something against the whole Hogan thing when he came back. And then they've cut out most of 2012 and 13, which was big CM Punk years. And you can't watch them. You can't find them on there. And you can't tell me, oh, well, they just didn't upload them yet, because they've uploaded everything else. So they're trying to cut CM Punk out of this business as much as possible. And, you know, if he were to come back to something like TNA, wouldn't make a lot of sense, because TNA is on like Destination America or something. You can't even watch it on your normal cable. So, you know, CM Punk really, he has to be successful in MMA, because he really doesn't have another option in the fighting. And now here's Ryback. So what is Ryback going to, one-on-one is just going to destroy any of these social outcast guys. You know, this match doesn't make any sense. Why? Why is he facing these guys? Like, if you're going to push Ryback, put him up against somebody, you know, have Ryback be the guy that, okay, have McMahon sick Ryback on, you know, Ambrose or something. You know, him fighting these matches doesn't do anything for his career. He's fighting against a nobody.
They never booked Ryback.
No, well, they're going to give him what? Curtis Axel, it looks like, is who he's going to go up against. And Curtis Axel is another guy. What a waste of space he is. So I don't know. It's just, to me, it's just baffling. It really is. So let's look at an era of time here while this is on commercial and Raw. An area of time that really a lot of people who are niche wrestling fans enjoy, but a lot of maybe the run-of-the-mill fans or the younger fans who are watching WWE today won't necessarily know about. And that's ECW, Paul Heyman's baby, the extreme championship wrestling. They used to have their events in ballrooms and things like that. I believe, was it the Hammerstein Ballroom, I believe is where
Hammerstein
they were?
Hammerstein Ballroom, yep.
Yeah. So they used to have, you know, they were in a place where they have banquets and they would have wrestling events there. You know, I mean, it was very low budget, but it got the job done. And I really feel that there were a lot of guys that, you know, put the Attitude Era, put the idea in Vince's head for the Extreme Attitude Era that came out. And some of those guys we're looking at here, and we'll get your favorites. And if you guys have favorites, feel free to email us, contact@overtime.news, or give us a shout, 713-955-0359. Again, I'm not expecting too many phone calls. I know a lot of people are watching Raw, and we still have to get this show marketed and promoted and whatever. But I have had a couple people email me personally who have listened to it who do enjoy it, so we do appreciate that. But some of the guys that I'm looking at, I mean, obviously the Dudleys, they started there.
Yep.
You know, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, the Sandman, Stevie Richards, who a lot of people remember him from Right to Censor, but he started in ECW. Taz. Raven, who had a pretty good WCW career as well, started there. The Sandman, I already mentioned. Tommy Dreamer, who probably is the only ECW guy that kids nowadays are going to know just because he had a recent push on Raw. You know, it was one of those things where they would push the envelope. They would have, you know, guys were actually getting hurt, and it was the closest thing to UFC that you're going to find today in terms of looking real and just doing stuff that people will go, oh, my God, did that just happen? So watching that, and I don't know how big of an ECW guy you were, but watching that, who were your favorite stars from the old ECW?
Top three, top of my head, Taz number one. I used to enjoy his matches and just his suplex. He was Suplex City before Brock Lesnar. No offense, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I'm gonna go with the franchise Shane Douglas. He had a decent WWE career, but in ECW he was the man. He was a combination of Triple H and Stone Cold in his prime. And number three, you're gonna have to go with Mr. Television Champion Rob Van Dam. He was just amazing. He was what you would call a mid-carder, but towards the end he became the main event guy. But in ECW, RVD, he was great as a television champion.
It's RVD. Now, he's did the whole thumb thing, and people the whole damn show, you know, people used to love that, and he got a huge push in WWE. But, I mean, looking at guys here, I got to say a guy that I liked, and admittedly, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of WCW because my aunt knows Hulk Hogan personally, so I used to watch, you know, him over there, and I used to watch a lot of that, and I used to watch WCW and then tape Raw on my VHS, and go back and watch that afterwards. But to me, I never really watched much of ECW just because I didn't get it on my local TV back then. So really the only premise that this is coming from is me going back watching ECW clips now as an adult. But I like a lot of Rhino, the Gore. I'm not going to put him number one, though. I would say number one probably to me was the Sandman, because Sandman was the crazy Dean Ambrose type, the crazy would do anything, had the kendo stick, he had the Sid Vicious look with the blonde hair, and was just that zero Fs given attitude that he had. So I'd probably list him one. Tommy Dreamer was up there as well, just because he's so iconic. I'd say probably Rhino. But guys, I mean, honorable mention has to be Sabu. Taz was great, although I followed him more in WWF than I did in ECW. You know, the Dudleys, the tables, people think that the table thing started in the Attitude Era. No, the D-Von get the table thing was an ECW thing that they just carried over. So that was exciting. A guy named Bill Alfonso and Balls Mahoney. Those guys
Mahoney, I remember him.
Yeah, Balls Mahoney. They had all sorts of guys that were interesting. But to me, I don't know. I mean, ECW, I don't think it was ever really big enough to really stay. But I guess I'll ask you, why was ECW popular as it was? What made ECW so good to the niche wrestling fans out there?
I think it was such a great alternative. because at the time, you know, in its heyday, WCW wasn't NWO WCW yet. So they were kind of a little boring. And WWE was on that still. And it, this was like right before the Attitude Era. So it was really PG with the, you know, with the colorful characters like Macho Man and Hogan and things like that. So it was a little different. And they had such a cult following. Paul Heyman, we see what he does today on the mic. Just picture him being the boss. I mean, he did amazing things back in the day. He doesn't get enough credit for it today. So,
he
filled the niche.
He doesn't even get credit for the bang-up job he did announcing next to JR during the Invasion storyline either. He was a pretty good commentator as well. Paul Heyman pretty much doing it all. So I think it made it so well because America loves violence. I mean, if you watched, obviously, Woodstock from back in the day, Woodstock 69 was all about peace and love and drugs and this and that. And then you go on and you watch Woodstock 99, which was upstate New York out by Utica. And it was just, I mean, they were breaking stuff, pushing over porta potties, lighting stuff on fire. I mean, tearing stuff down, mosh pits like crazy. It was an attitude era, not just in the WWF, but overall. It was a bunch of angry teenagers. It was a time where violence, sex and violence sold. And that's what ECW brought to the table. Just extreme, you know, guys getting lit on fire, you know, going through tables. I mean, guys just, you know, jumping off the top of the, you know, top of cages through the ring. I mean, it was just all sorts of stuff. The whole Hell in a Cell idea actually came from ECW. And they never actually did it. They didn't have funds for it. But that whole idea sort of stemmed from that. And it was a time period where sex and violence really sold. And that was something that WWF sort of stole from ECW, which was one of the things Paul Heyman was kind of pissed about, because they made all their money being as big as they were from taking ideas from the little guy. And what do you know? All of a sudden, now they're still on TV today for that reason. So that's partly because of why I think it was so successful. I also sort of think that ECW was one of those things where if you wanted to see different people, sometimes you get sick of seeing the same people over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Check out ECW and you're like, oh, this is new. I mean, you know, and it sort of was, it was interesting because you didn't have it as much. It wasn't on TV weekly. It wasn't one of those things that was, you know, a big production show. It was only, I think they only had an ECW show like once or twice a month or something like that. So,
yep.
I mean, it was something that you just were intrigued by because it wasn't force-fed down your throat. And when I think when WWF made SmackDown and subsequently WCW made Nitro, Thunder. The Thunder was a Thursday show.
Yeah, I remember that.
It subsequently shoved it down your throat in a way. And said, well, this is what you're going to watch. And same thing with TNA. The reason I liked TNA was because I didn't get to see it that often. It wasn't really on TV as much until maybe the last couple of years. And it was, they had one show, and it was an hour and a half long. And, you know, it just this whole three-hour thing with Raw, you'd think that with 3 hours it would be amazing. But it's really not. There's a lot of snooze-inducing elements to Raw now, having it be 3 hours. I'd like a two-hour format. In fact, there's more action watching on WWE Network here. There was more action in the two-hour shows during the Attitude Era than there was during, you know, a three-hour show now. So, I don't know. It is what it is. Dean Ambrose is coming out to the ring now. He's going to face Bray Wyatt. Again, makes no sense. There's no reason for it. But Triple H, you would think with what's going on at WrestleMania, that Triple H would sort of shove Brock Lesnar on him tonight. Or if they're going to push Ryback, say you're going to face Ryback and make Dean Ambrose be like, okay, so Ryback's a nobody, and then have Ryback come out and beat him. That would be interesting. But to shove Bray Wyatt in there randomly makes no sense.
But
why?
I think they're going to save Brock until next week. He's definitely going to be in the house in Philly where Paul Heyman's going to be. You know, he's going to be in Paul Heyman's backyard. So you got to bring out Brock next week.
And so is
and
Barclays,
then, you know,
too. He's right in the backyard as well.
Oh, he'll be
he's from Long Island.
He'll be everybody, all hands on deck when it comes to Barclays. Everybody will be in attendance for that show. Undertaker, Shane.
And you'll
everybody.
Be in attendance as well.
Oh, I'll be calling in.
How close is the Barclays Center to you?
It's literally
less than a mile. So you could walk there on a nice day.
Exactly. On a nice day, I could walk there.
Beautiful. See, with me, I've got the closest thing we've got is the Times Union Center now, which back in the day used to be called the Pepsi Arena, which, for those of you who are wrestling fans, what happened at the Pepsi Arena, Kurt Angle won the WWE title or WWF title back then for the first time in the Pepsi Arena. That's also the arena where Stone Cold got the did the beer bath against the corporation back in early 99.
Nice.
That happened I was at that show. I was 99. Shoot, so I was 11. Okay, that had happened. 10 or 11. So that was that show. And also New Year's Revolution, where Edge came out after the Elimination Chamber and beat Cena, cashed in his first ever Money in the Bank cash in. That was at the Pepsi Arena, which is now the Times Union. But that's a solid 20 minutes from me. I'm about 20 minutes north of there. So no, I couldn't walk to it. But yeah, that's so I've got some wrestling history. In fact, give you a quick wrestling thing before we jump into our roadblock predictions for Saturday. Edge, the reason why he went by the name Edge was because back when he was wrestling, before he came up with the name Edge, I got to have my computer here in front of me because I'm not quite sure what he went by before that. Let me just pull it up here. He used to be billed as ring names. Okay, he was Adam Impact. He was Damon Stryker. He was the Sexton Hardcastle. He was a bunch of guys. He got the name Edge because there was a radio station here. I believe it was 103.1 The Edge, I believe is what they were. And they used to play the hard rock music. They used to play a lot of the stuff that he was interested in. And they actually interviewed him when he was a nobody, came into town, did this whole thing. And he actually came out and said one time, chose the name Edge because he loved the music on that station. Whenever they'd come to Albany, he would always tune in and always listen. And that station sort of had an interest in him. And he went, okay, well, I'm going to call myself Edge. I think that's cool. Edge is a cool name. And they agreed, WWF agreed. And that's sort of why they gave him his first ever title in Albany, because his name came straight from one of our radio stations. So that's a cool little tribute piece for him. And that's another reason why I like him, too, because obviously I've lived here pretty much my whole life, and that's one of the things I feel like a sort of a sense of pride for that. So, but, yeah, so that's Edge, and we'll get into Edge in a little bit. Edge and Christian show, you can check out WB Network right after this. Not a big fan of the Edge and Christian show. I think it's kind of stupid, but regardless. Roadblock predictions for Saturday. Right now we know it's Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt. Again, makes zero sense. Really terrible booking. There's no reason to throw these two against each other. And Lesnar, we know Lesnar's going to win because you have to have that push going into Mania. So that would be another pay-per-view that Wyatt's going to drop, at least in my opinion. You already said Triple H is probably going to keep the belt against Ambrose. We think Lesnar might sort of interfere in that match. Roman Reigns versus Sheamus. Again, okay. I mean, the whole League of Nations thing, it's sort of one of those things where they're putting him up against it. You know League of Nations is going to interfere in the match and beat down Roman. You know that that's going to happen. Some of the other matches that I'm interested in, though, the Tag Team Revival versus – or just called the Revival, I guess, versus Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore. You're more of a NXT follower than I am, NXT follower. What other matches are we expected?
I mean, I think that's pretty much it. And we've got Roman Reigns versus Sheamus for like the 20th time that nobody cares about.
So but you think it's going to be a short pay-per-view?
Well, I think it's only going to be like a two-hour special. It's a Saturday night. It's a Saturday, not the traditional Sunday. So it's pretty much a house show. Which is why I kind of like the network, because they turned a house show into like a mini pay-per-view. Something that UFC could follow suit, but that's a whole other story. But I think it's going to be pretty much straight out. The only title I see change – well, I don't even see a title change. I think the Revival is going to keep the belt because Enzo and Cassidy are pretty much on their way to the main roster, either right before Mania or right after Mania. So it doesn't make sense putting the NXT tag team titles on their waist. I think Ambrose is going to take a beating. He's going to look good. And Triple H is going to win probably by help or interference of Brock. And I think that's pretty much it. I hate to see Bray get buried, though. I mean,
I love this character. Like, Bray just delivered another great speech.
Put a mid-card title on him. Let the family, you know, protect him, be a nice stable. Like, they're just wasting the Wyatts.
And, you know, he talked all this stuff about being the eater of worlds and all this stuff. And like you said, they lose every pay-per-view match. So, I mean, you know, I think that really what they could do with this was they could fill the void that The Undertaker and Kane being gone, sort of having that dark force sort of thing. Them being gone fills that void for that sort of niche. And I think, obviously, they've really been booked poorly as well because they're in a bunch of matches that don't make sense. I mean, they set up so many opportunities for storylines with these guys, and they don't really give them any.
None. Yeah.
Oh, that's why. Okay, that's why it's Lesnar. They're showing you now why they're saying it's Lesnar versus Wyatt, because the Wyatts attacked Brock at the Rumble. Okay. Maybe that's why, but why wait 2 months to put him in the match with him?
2 months, exactly.
See, I thought it would have been the Wyatts versus Lesnar like the next Monday or something, but the fact that they waited this long, people have forgotten that they even did that at the Rumble. it's a head scratcher, really. So, your predictions, I sort of agree with you. I think, obviously, it's going to be a Roman Reigns beatdown by the League of Nations. They're going to come in, interfere in the match. It'll probably end in DQ. If it doesn't end in DQ, it'll probably end up with Roman getting the shaft, because that's, I think, what they feel is best for business, because if he wins, the crowd isn't going to really like it. Lesnar versus Wyatt, I think that Lesnar pretty much has to win that match going into WrestleMania, trying to look strong. I think it would be cool to see Ambrose sort of take it from him, but again, a pay-per-view, it's not a traditional pay-per-view, it's a brand new thing. I don't think there's any shot that Ambrose takes the belt in this instance anyway. The Revival match, don't know much about, so again, you know, it is what it is. But that's pretty much Roadblock. I'm anxious to see it. On Saturday, I'm probably going to watch the replay, because Saturday night I'll probably be out having some adult beverages, but either way. Now, look at it this way. We talked a little bit about maybe it's not a lack of talent, but it's perhaps a lack of booking.
Mm-hmm.
The top five roster talents right now that they have. They don't have many, but if they have top five talents in this business right now, who would it be?
That are not injured, right?
Sure. A weekly top five talent that you see every week.
All right. Oh man. I'm gonna go with Dean Ambrose one. I'll go with Reigns. No, damn. You know what? I'm gonna go Dean Ambrose one. I'm gonna go AJ two. AJ Styles two. He's just not being
okay.
I mean, you know, people forget. I know he's feuding with Jericho right now, but he's a workhorse that they're not using. I'm going to go Roman Reigns 3. We haven't seen him in weeks. That's kind of odd. 4, I'm going to throw some NXT, because I don't think they use a lot of NXT talent properly. I'm going to go with Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe was great in TNA. I loved him in TNA.
Him and AJ carried that company for many years, and it's a shame to see the way Samoa is not. He should be on the main roster. I don't know why they sent him to NXT first. Unlike AJ, AJ was, you know, sent straight to the main roster, no questions asked. So that was kind of odd. And number five,
And you're gonna go with who is five?
I'm gonna go with Ziggler at five.
Ziggler. And obviously, if we counted injured superstars, then on that list it would have to be.
We're putting Seth Rollins number one. I'm putting Cesaro on that list. I'm putting I'm gonna put Cena there too. Jesus.
Yeah, no, he's a great athletic talent, that's for sure. Well, what about the top five who maybe? Okay, we're gonna form this a different way then. Top five who are getting a push right now who don't deserve one. And maybe you don't necessarily have to go with five, but some guys who are not getting a push who do deserve to.
Can Kevin Owens should be in the main event roster. He should be. He shouldn't be holding a mid card strap. He's their best heel, and yet he has the Intercontinental title. He should be the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, not the
CEO. You really think so with Kevin Owens, huh?
Not the COO. The COO should just be behind the scenes. You know, we saw Vince hold the title for like an hour. Triple H should not be holding the title going into Mania. You should have let the talent deal with that. And I think when Seth went down, Kevin Owens' stock should have rose, but it didn't. So I'm going to go with Kevin Owens. He should definitely be up there. I'm going to go with Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose is the Stone Cold of this era. And, yeah, he's having some great matches and great feuds, but he should definitely be in the title hunt, not necessarily fighting Brock Lesnar. And who else you could say that could probably be – that's not being used properly. Ryback's not being used properly. He should be like a warm
machine. The Wyatts.
The Wyatts, and the Wyatts, yeah, the entire Wyatt stable. Like, they're 20 times better than the League of Nations, but for some reason, we see more in the League of Nations than the Wyatts. But that's
we all know how much you love the League of Nations. I think you ranked them, if I remember correctly, you ranked them last week as the worst stable of all time.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way, speaking of ECW throwback, they had the Blue World Order, where it was the Blue Beetle and a few other characters. They were a better stable than the League of Nations.
Wow. Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's some bold words, but all right. I think Ryback shouldn't be getting the push now. I think he should have gotten the push 4 years ago. But, you know, hey, I'm not the one making the decisions. Obviously, I think the Wyatt should be getting a push. Personally, I just don't think that there's a whole long list of credible talent right now that I think should be getting a push. I think that there's, you know, like if you look at a roster from 99, 2000, 2001, there's guys that I said, wow, well, he didn't really get the push when maybe he should have. Now I look at that and I go, I don't really see a big time storyline with them. But, you know, Ambrose, obviously, I think they should do more with him because right now it seems like they bump him up and the crowd cheers him and then he loses. So to me, that doesn't really make a whole bunch of sense. Cesaro, you and Dustin seem to love Cesaro. I've never been a fan of Cesaro personally.
Oh man, Cesaro, he does some good work.
Maybe I'm different. I liked, you know, obviously the Attitude Era because of one, the storylines, but two, just that tenacity, using the chairs, the hardcore stuff, this and that. The whole technical wrestler thing, that's why I didn't like Kurt Angle and why I wasn't a huge Chris Benoit fan. I don't really want to watch Scholastic Wrestling, and I don't care about him as an athlete. I want to be entertained, you know?
Gotcha.
And to me, Cesaro is boring, to me anyway. But again, maybe he's just a product of the PG era. But for somebody who ranks actual in-ring athletic talent, obviously, maybe I think Cesaro should be near the top. But again, I just want to be entertained, and he just doesn't entertain me. In fact, I was more entertained by – who was that? Who is that guy, the Italian guy there? The jobber.
Valvinus?
No. Why am I blanking on his name?
Oh, Santino. Right,
yeah, Santino. Santino Morella. I was more entertained by Santino Morella than I am by Cesaro, to be honest with you.
Okay. That's
good. Even Gilbert entertained me more because I just want to be entertained. I want to laugh. I want to be emotional. I want to watch this. And you know, I want to love characters and hate characters, right? I don't really care about Cesaro. But I do understand what people are saying when they say that he does good work in-ring, talent-wise, athletic-wise. There's no question there. But again, to me, I don't rank that high. Call me weird, but I don't. And another thing you mentioned about Cena being there, because I do have a creative exercise. I think it'll take us a couple minutes here to get through, and then we're going to take you right through the end of we have a – It's 11 o'clock right now. Wait, whoa. It's 11 o'clock right now, so this is the main event. Wyatt versus – oh, my goodness. Wow. Bray Wyatt and Dean. Wow. Okay. Will we see John Cena at Mania?
I thought hard about it, and I think there's no way he's missing Mania. He's going to have to make an appearance somehow, some way. The same way they're building The Rock's going to be there, Cena's going to be there, too. There's no
Maybe
way
an interference, perhaps, or –
I'm really starting to think that something major is going to go down in that Undertaker-Shane match. I just don't know what, but I feel like something major is going to take place.
And
something
that
like shifts the landscape of the
WWE. I feel that perhaps Cena screws
Triple H. And obviously, but it, you know, the two probably, I would say, most hated guys by the fans, Cena and Roman Reigns. If Cena helps Reigns win the belt, they're going to be booing at the end of Mania. So as much as that would be a plausible scenario, I don't think it would be best for business.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that happening. I do see maybe Rollins might show up for that match.
Rollins could be the one that could do it, yes. That would actually make a lot of sense, especially if we are going to have a Shield reunion. But,
yeah.
You know, I just don't know if he's physically ready to do a lot of in-ring stuff, but, hey, who knows? Look at
Speaking of Shield reunion, they're already talking about SummerSlam tickets go on sale April 2nd, so I'm going to be looking, and that's going to be back at Barclays. And
SummerSlam
rumor
at the Barclays,
has it,
okay.
Rumor has it that's where we're going to see, like, a Shield triple threat title picture scenario.
You know,
I can see that playing out well, too.
That would be interesting. Again, this is not a main event to me. This is a match. This is almost like the setup guy in a bullpen. This should be like the eighth inning match. This should not be the main event match right now, but I do understand the lack of talent that's out, so maybe that's why they're doing it. Okay, so this Shane match, you think that something big is going to happen. Do you think that Shane does beat Undertaker? Because that I'll probably throw something through my TV if that happens.
I think Shane beats Undertaker, and I also think, you can save this one, store it for the time machine later. I think this whole Vince and Shane thing backfires, where I think Vince sides with Shane, and then it becomes Shane. Because the real beef is Shane versus Stephanie. That's going to be the feud that's going to carry on after Mania. So I think somehow Vince is going to help his son take control of the company.
Okay.
And then
Vince
and Shane versus Steph and Triple H.
Huh. Well, we've seen it before. We've seen, you know, when they used to pump up during the Attitude Era, they used to pump up those two kind of hating each other and then them aligning.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that has happened. But, you know, I don't want to see The Undertaker lose again. I wanted him to stay undefeated to begin with, but obviously, you know, I know now that that's not going to happen because he does have that one loss on his record. I think that there's got to be a way where, like, maybe something happens and Shane ends up getting screwed or something, and then Shane says, all right, double or nothing. I can beat The Undertaker. I had him on the ropes, and then, you know, something happened. Vince screwed him or something happened. And I want another shot. And then he fights him on Raw, beats him on Raw, and then takes over the company. I just don't want to see him drop another at Mania.
I know. That's the tricky part. Like, how – that's what's intriguing. Like, how they're going to book that. Are we going to see them take a lose again? Till McMahon
or perhaps it could end in no contest. It could end in a no contest where, you know, both guys are just unconscious for the 10 count. And it ends in a no contest, and then he puts Shane in another match for a double or nothing kind of a thing on Raw the next 90 wins. That could possibly – that I'd be okay with that ending. But I just –
they won't jeopardize the Mania crowd for that. Like, that's going to be 100,000 people screaming, booing if that happens. They're probably not going to want to go that route.
Oh, and look at this. Here comes the Wyatt family. Wyatt family is going to interfere here, and – I expect it. Whoa, see, that's pretty cool how they the lights come back on and they're on the corners of the ring. I enjoy that. But here we go. It's going to be an Ambrose beatdown. Now watch. We're going to see Triple H come out. And hey, now did I call this or did I not call this? That the Authority is sort of going to recruit the Wyatts to be their henchmen. And that's why we're going to see a Shield reunion, because the Shield's going to come back to fight the Wyatts that the Authority is putting in power to sort of be that to do their dirty work. I think I called that on our first show.
I can see that happening.
And now if Triple H comes out here now, and the very well could be the case here, but the Wyatts see too many stables right now are winning in strength and numbers. Even the League of Nations, the only reason why they're winning is strength and numbers. And I mean, Dean Ambrose had this match won. Let's see. So what's going to happen here? 11:04. Are we going to see King of Kings? Or are they going to end it? If they end it, yep, there it is. I was going to say they can't end it like that. That'd be a boring ending.
So here comes Triple H in the – oh, he's in a suit, though. He's not in the fighting gear like he was against Roman, so we'll see. But anyways, Triple H, see, he still looks badass. Even with the short hair, he still looks badass.
Absolutely.
Triple H is always
– arguably the greatest heel ever in the WWE.
Oh, yeah, got to be. I mean, he is – the dude is just insane. Let's see here. Let's see what happens here. Again, we're taking you through the end of Raw. 11:05 is the time right now. 11:05 Eastern time. We have one cool exercise that we're going to do after this that may be interesting to some people. But let me see here. It's going to be Triple H gloating a little bit. Now, do they go to like one of those 11:15 type things here tonight? And we see perhaps the return of Roman? To try to maybe get Roman a little bit more good in the eyes of the crowd, or are we not going to see Roman again until Mania? Because I mean, if Roman comes back here, they start beating down on Ambrose. Roman comes out and saves Ambrose. That might help them along a little bit.
Look at the crowd. They want to see the Wyatts take out Triple H, but of course, we're not getting that.
Nope. If they really want to have them be psychotic, and really want to have them be sort of rabid animals that they're portraying them as, they would go after Triple H. But, yeah, no, they're not doing that. They're leaving, which also furthers my point that perhaps that they're going to be hired by the authority to be hitmen. So let's see here, though. Are we just going to end with Triple H holding the belt up, or is he going to take some shots at Ambrose here? Again, you're watching. He's got to. You're watching live. You're listening live. Let's see here.
Damn, how many weeks are going to end there with Dean Ambrose laying on his back, smiling?
I think every week until Mania. Let's see here. And here he comes. He's rolling up the sleeves.
And again, they're doing this because they want us to remember how badass Triple H is as a heel, so we won't boo Roman Reigns. That's all this is about.
True.
I'm still booing Roman Reigns. So I'm still booing him.
Yeah, you don't like Roman either.
I don't like the push that they've been giving him the last 2 years. I don't think he's the best worker. Oh, look at this.
Dirty deeds on Triple H. He's not going to, though. I mean, there's no way he wins this belt.
God, if he did, it would make Mania so much better.
If he won. Okay, so if Ambrose found a way to win it, it would make Mania better, you think? If it was Ambrose.
Because then we're going to have probably Ambrose work two matches and Triple H, Ambrose. And Reigns is a triple threat match, but they're not going to do that.
And maybe adding Lesnar into the mix?
A fatal four-way for the title, why not? Let them go, let them all go. Because you still have the mid-card titles to figure out, and more than likely they're probably going to do like one of those like Money in the Bank-style kind of matches like last year, where you can have like 8 competitors or split it up. I say put them two in the main event, make it a fatal four-way, let everybody kill each other.
You know, I'd be down. I'd be down for that.
It worked when it was a three-way, when it was Benoit, Michaels, and Triple H that year at WrestleMania. I think it was WrestleMania 20 that happened.
Yeah, it did. It did. Okay, so Raw is over now. We saw that. They did what they usually do. They build up to the pay-per-view with the two guys who are going to be the main event at the pay-per-view. So now let me ask you this. From a creative exercise standpoint, first of all, I don't know how much you do writing-wise, but have you ever heard of something called the eFed on the Internet?
eFed? No, what's that?
Basically what it is it's a organization where – then there's a whole bunch of them where you go on and you create a character, okay?
Okay.
And you – become that character, and you write out something called RPs, which are role plays. And basically what you do is you set the scene. So a lot of the times they don't do in-ring stuff, but they do a lot of, you know, this character, you set the scene, you have them do a shoot against who they're facing, and you get an opponent, and you basically write a promo and a scene for this match. And then there's judges, and the person who judges the one who they feel was better wins the match. And, you know, they have title structures, they have all this stuff, and it's basically the same thing as regular wrestling, except, you know, who gets the push is the one who writes better or who does a better job, you know, portraying the scene, whatever it might be. So if you right now had to, let's say if you were going into WWE Creative and they told you right now that you could create a character, you could create a wrestler that, you know, would start as the new guy, but he would work his way up, let's say, you know, to be world champion eventually. What character, do you have a name off the top that you could think of, or what he would look like, and what kind of wrestler he would be? And if you could basically bring the E-Fed role play sort of a scenario into real life, who would your character be, his name, and why? Give us a little, paint the scene for us a little bit.
Oh, man.
Put me on the spot here.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm old school, traditional wrestler. I really like how Flair used to dress in, like, in the late 80s, early 90s when he had the Rolex, the tuxedo. I would have my guy, you know, do all his promo work, well-dressed, well-groomed, you know, something like a Conor McGregor, something like that. And I would
he'd be doing shoots from like a bar with a nice watch on, maybe some sunglasses. He'd wear the suit.
Yeah, a combination of McGregor, The Godfather, and Ric Flair. Just imagine that picture.
Okay.
We have Rolexes, we have the bars, and we have the hose. That'll be a good scenario right there.
Do you perhaps have a name for him?
I would probably call him. Oh man, something. I would probably say something like along the lines of like the franchise line.
How about Jason
Cordonnier? Like
call him Jason. Call him the franchise Jason Cordonnier. Use your real name.
You know, I kind of like Vince Mamato. I don't know if you noticed, but Vince takes a lot of like sports and put it together, mm-hmm. like the whole what's his name? Wade Barrett is pretty much a combination of sports legends in Boston. So I would probably call him like, you know, Derek. It's the franchise Derek Jackson or something like that.
Okay, so you do like what would possibly be what could be a real name, but have it be something. Okay. I'm digging that. And I'm assuming he'd be sort of like, what would you use as your picture base? Would he be like, you know, a well-dressed black man? Like, would he look like CeeLo like you are? Or what would he look like, you think?
He would look more like, it would look like a combination of the Rock and Ballers. That's exactly how you look. Ball head, just like the Rock. From the HBO show Ballers.
You wear the sunglasses a lot and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But his wrestling attire would be something in terms of like Kurt Angle.
Okay.
Something like
the tight whole thing.
Yeah, to show that he's legitimate, like he really wrestles.
Real quick, what would that be?
It could be anything. I wouldn't have anything on top of my head. It could be anything.
And real quick, and I'll tell you who mine is in a minute here, but if he had a finishing move, I already have my stuff all planned out here, but if he had a finishing move, if you can think up a name of one, cool, but if not, what kind of move would it be here, or would he have a combo of different things that he would use for a finisher? Like what kind of move would the finisher be? Like a DDT type thing, or what are you thinking?
I'm thinking in terms of like a Dean Ambrose dirty deed that connects into like a Mr. Perfect superplex. So like after you plant him down, you bridge him and pin him.
Okay, beautiful. And last one, is your character a heel or a face or in between?
Oh, he's in between. he's definitely more heel than face, but he's in between.
Cool, cool. So we've got so far we got the franchise. You say it was Derek Jackson?
Derek Jackson, yep.
Okay.
I took Derek Jeter and I took Reggie Jackson and combined their names because I couldn't do that to my Mets, so I did.
I was going to say Yankee references, huh?
Yep.
Okay. See, with me, I've already had it planned out. For me, my picture base is going to be, and part of me is cheating because I did this actually as one of my characters on the on an eFed, but
okay.
My character pick base would be Edge, okay? Because I think Edge just looked badass. We'd have the long blonde hair, a couple tats here and there. His ring attire would be the tights, the pants, kind of like a Jericho-esque or an Edge, you know, what Edge wore. Not quite sure what color, what would be on them, but it would be tights like that, no shirt, the whole thing, long, long blonde hair. And his name would be Chris Chaos. And now, when I say that, it would be because basically he would be like what Edge was, the ultimate opportunist, always out there able to do and willing to do whatever it took to win a match. You know, he's the type of guy from Shane, like Shane back in the day, jumping off the Titantron, doing crazy things that would make you go, oh, my God, you know. But yet he's right around Edge's size as well. So he's a little bit on the bigger side, but he's not huge. He would be sort of Ambrose-esque in personality, kind of a psychopath a little bit. A lot of his promos would be done, you know, with him walking, you know, with dead trees and in the rain and, you know, pulling his hair out and, like, talking between grit teeth and, like, a lot of that, you know, like, a lot of, like, he belongs in a padded room kind of a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be his real shtick. And he would be... He would be very intense, very hardcore, using a lot of weapons, basically being very violent and vicious. And he would be a heel. He'd be a complete heel. I already have theme music for him. I've thought this whole thing way out, and maybe I'll put a profile of him up on overtime.news for people to check out with a photo, and because I still have a picture of him and everything from my old eFed. But and his finishing move would be sort of a. Would be like the F5 mixed with like a tilt-a-whirl DDT in a way. He'd throw them up like the F5 and then catch them and go down with that. And I would call it the equalizer.
Right.
And yeah, the equalizer. And then he would also have a spear. Okay. But that's too Edge-like. So I'm thinking put some Shawn Michaels in the mix and have him have a super kick also as a finisher and call that the wrong side of the tracks.
Hey, I like that.
And so wrong side of the tracks, super kick, equalizer finisher, and he would be one of those guys where he's very cocky, very, you know, just kind of over the top with everything that he does. And I think he'd be very, you know, like hardcore-esque. Where would your character be built from?
He would be built from, I'll keep it here. I'll keep it Brooklyn, New York, but more
Brooklyn,
like
New York?
The privilege of Brooklyn, New York. Like he went to.
Okay, so he could be like an entrepreneur or something.
Yeah.
Okay, own a business, something like that.
Kind of like CM Punk's original straight edge thing, you know, where he's like, he's all, you know, he was well American bred, and now he's just want to party and make money. Like he doesn't care about championship belts. He just cares.
No, I also had a character. Well, I also had a character once in an eFed that was called. Hanari Carnes, which was a Alberto Del Rio type guy who was a Spanish American entrepreneur from the Dominican Republic, and was that. But Chris Chaos was my main guy, and you know, I'm thinking also that my guy would be built from somewhere in the South, Tampa, Florida, Clearwater, Florida, somewhere like that, because he would look kind of like a surfer kid a little bit. And he would be all about, you know, the big muscle truck, and he would have all this. But he would also sort of be – he would have a lot of psychological issues, and he would – you know, like I said, a lot of his promos would you know, kind of pulling hair out, talking through grit teeth, a little bit like Edge got into towards the end of his career. And for me, another thing I was thinking recently was that Chris Chaos could be thrown into, and again, a WWE creative, if you're listening to this, I would be willing to alter Chris Chaos's image and persona, and I'd be willing to alter it to my own, to me. And I would be Chris Chaos. Now tell me if you think that this is a cool idea. I would come in to right into Raw the way it's right now, and I would have an ironclad contract where I cannot be touched because obviously you've got to rip my head off. You know, I'm not a professional wrestler. An ironclad contract where I could not be touched, but I am the matchmaker. I am basically a freelance commissioner. And I would make matches that are chaotic. You know, I would come out, for instance, some of the things that we talked about in terms of who we feel should be in matches, I would come out and make those matches live on the mic. I would do things to, you know, give you an example with Dean Ambrose. You know, I would just for the sake of chaos, I would come out, make a match, do the whole thing on the mic. I'd have my theme music, the whole thing. I would say, look, you know, crowd doesn't like you, Roman.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd boos you all the time. The crowd, you are not the face. Every time you come out, you get booed, and you seem to lose matches left and right. So Dean Ambrose, the crowd loves. Dean Ambrose, people want to see. Dean Ambrose is what's best for business. So I would come out and say, you know what? We're going to figure this out exactly the case. We're not going to have you win matches. We're not going to have you do this. We're not going to have, you know, other people decide your fate. It's going to be Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns. The winner takes on Triple H at WrestleMania because you two can't seem to agree on who, you know, your friendship only goes as far as, you know, as that. So why don't we find out how good of friends you really are and have you two come out, blah, blah, blah. That's a chaotic type match. People will be like, oh, wow, that kind of thing. And
Sierra,
you know,
Hotel,
India,
Echo,
Lima,
Delta,
Shield.
Why, hello there, Dustin.
Jesus Christ. Don't you guys think it was like a great setup for S.H.I.E.L.D. tonight? Don't you feel like it was a great setup for S.H.I.E.L.D. tonight?
No, I don't. I don't think it was because I don't think they're ready yet because they haven't established anybody for the S.H.I.E.L.D. to go after yet. If this happens to be the Wyatts being the henchmen for the Authority, then yes, they need the S.H.I.E.L.D.
yeah,
to come back and go against them, but that hasn't really 100% been established yet.
I just feel like it's almost like there's just this unwritten rule, like give it 3 or 4 weeks and then it unfolds. Like you need a beatdown of Dean Ambrose, check. You need a beatdown of Roman Reigns. Yeah, exactly. You had the Roman Reigns stuff already. Check. So now you are pretty damn close. I've been listening to the show the whole way. You got pretty close with the with Triple H coming out and having the Wyatts. The only thing that could have happened that didn't happen was just a straight up like Undertaker go to a knee and put his hand up to the urn like he used to do to Paul Bearer, out of like Wyatt to Triple H, and that would have sealed it. Like if you got some kind of a like I am your guy type deal, you know, but instead you got Wyatt kind of looking at the WWE title and touching it, so that gives you these mixed, now you're all messed up, right? Because now you're like, well, what is he saying, he wants the title now, you know? So it's like I don't know what exactly their, you know, their angle was. Like I don't know what
I'm thinking that was a good setup, though, because now Seth Rollins is going to come back and be like, look, I was your guy. I was, you know, the man, and I happened to go down and get injured. I happened to go down and you know, something out of my control.
and you threw me away like I was garbage, and now you want this guy to be your guy, really? And then that's why he's going to come back and be in the Shield, because then Triple H and the Authority can be like, you know what, you need to learn respect for authority, blah, 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 blah. You know, maybe you've changed since you've been gone, this and that. He's going to shine back up with the Shield. The Wyatts are going to be the main thing, and if they're going to push the Wyatts, Triple H is going to make sure that Bray gets the belt, kind of like he made sure Rollins got it. That's where I would maybe see that going.
Well, I mean, I guess I kind of agree with you. I just feel like in order for a Shield reunion, it needs to be out of like pure chaos, and like they've got nowhere else to turn because they've built up the hatred between the three of these, or at least the two towards Rollins, so much that in order to bury that, you would have to be like to the point where Roman feels like he can't even get through a Raw without getting his ass kicked. And same thing with Ambrose. Like, you would have to believe that they have no shot. And I just don't think that they've done a good enough job to sell a return of the Shield. I don't think it could just be out of spite. I don't think Rollins could come back and be like, you forgot about me, I'm bringing my boys back. He could do that by himself. He could say, I forgot about me. And he could go baby by himself. He doesn't need to bring them back. And the other thing is, if you think about it, back in the day, Hunter and Shawn got together because they were bored and they knew they weren't getting a shot at the belt. So it was basically like creative being like, well, all right, well, we're not going to use you guys as main eventers right now, but if you want to have some fun, we'll bring DX back. You want to do that? And that's why they brought DX back all those times. They did it to keep themselves busy and keep themselves entertained and interested in the program. Otherwise, they would have checked out mentally like Randy Orton, and they would have just been dipping, faking shoulder injuries, and just be, you know, I'll come when you finally decide that I'm worth your time type.
Jesus,
deal.
What happened to Orton?
Yeah, so it's one of those
kind of fell off.
Yeah, and according to everybody, he's got a shoulder injury, he's getting married, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, whatever. It's just a fluctuating time in the WWE. But that creative exercise that you did was pretty cool. I can't even remotely give you any of that information because I've never
I was going to put him on the spot because had I told him beforehand, he would have been ready, would have taken notes. I think about this kind of crap all the time, so I was ready for it. But Dustin, we're going to get you, though. I am curious. Maybe I'll talk to you off the air about who your character would be, what kind of style he would be.
I might come back next week, but I'm jetting now. I'll let you finish the show how you want to finish it. But I got a special song for you on the way out. Well.
And for those of you who don't know who that was the Jester. You can check out his show, the Live Fantasy Jester. Jason's got his show every Friday Night Clicks. Is Jackie ready to jump on as well? Is she going to be doing it with you?
She'll be ready to go on Friday.
All right, Champo to Baseball, that's the Arlena show. Obviously, Satellite Sundays, that's our baby here at Overtime.News. I'm going to have the Dallas Cowboys show, Stars in Line, coming back once the draft hits. Overall, it's been a good show. Overall, you know, it's tough to talk about wrestling for 90 minutes with no commercials. But, hey, we do it. It's the most chill show on the air. We take you through the end of Raw, and we give you our little input and our output, and then we give you our opinions. And that's really, truly off the ropes. Until next week. Jason Cordonier, Chris McSwiggin, we'll see you off the ropes, Overtime.News.
See you guys.
Dead man walking.
You've done it now.
Cook it.